Welcome. You're listening to Business Lives podcast by Vox Markets. I'm Fran, and joining me today is Lana Ellie, founder of Flume. Her award-winning business supports and empowers independent florists, allowing them to sell their own products online through a tech-enabled marketplace. Flume aims to revitalize an archaic process through a digital platform. So hi, Lana. Thank you for coming on the podcast today. It's a pleasure to have you. Your company is Flume, which I believe you founded in 2016, and you're sort of providing an alternative to the high street for independent florists. So before we sort of get into the intricacies of your company, would you mind sort of just to familiarize our audience and listeners with you and sort of what you're about? Would you mind sort of telling me a little bit about your background? You know, what were you doing before? You know, did you always have these sort of entrepreneurial sort of tendencies from a young age, or was that something that sort of came as you grew up?
I wish I could say I was one of those people who like sold lemonade when I was four. I definitely had, I thought a lot about kind of doing my own thing for a long time, and I attempted it in many cases without actually ever following through.
Yeah.
Which is quite funny, because the first question I always get asked is like, oh, how did you actually get to the point of following through and doing it?
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, I tried many other things beforehand and never actually followed through. But yeah, my background, just to jump back, is I started my job, or my kind of career professionally, at Burberry, and they taught me project management. I then went agency side, and then ultimately I became the head of branded content at Vice.
Wow, really cool.
Yeah, so I was head of branded content for ID Magazine, which is their fashion publication, and it was really there where I had my last push of like, I want to do something. And it was an idea that I had had several years before, probably at Burberry 6 years before that. But I definitely didn't have the factors I needed to start a business. Like, I didn't know enough about tech.
Yeah.
I didn't have the right experience. I didn't have the confidence level that I probably needed.
Mm-hmm.
And weirdly, it happened whilst I was at Vice, but like, that was one of my best jobs, you know.
Really,
like,
yeah.
I was people kept saying like, why would you leave that job?
And you're sort of approaching both industries, like not just the florist side but the tech as well. It's quite sort of intimidating. So
yeah, weirdly I never thought of it that way. I think the minute I started actually looking into the market, I just got so addicted to what it could be that one thing followed the next thing.
Yeah.
It was like you kind of had blinders on to how scary it potentially was.
And did you find sort of coming into an industry which was sort of unfamiliar territory, sort of, how did you find that? Did you find it sort of surprisingly easy? Did you find a lot of your skills, you know, sort of relatively transferable in a sense?
I think it actually worked to my benefit, to be honest, because it's such an archaic industry and the leaders in it are like, you know, the other technology products are very much legacy products. The user experience, et cetera, of them are just horrible. So to be able to come into an industry that I wasn't used to, I think I brought a different way of thinking, or I wasn't limited by the fear of things not working because that's not how they'd worked in the past.
Yeah.
And having said that as well, when I did first start it, a friend of mine who I was actually sitting at lunch with me when I came up with the idea. His father is Terry Leahy, who's the ex-CEO of Tesco.
Oh, okay.
And
yes.
So they, both of them were like, what are you doing? You know nothing about flowers. So they actually introduced me to the supplier Tesco so that I could get some kind of market understanding beyond just Googling things.
Wow, that's great.
And he ended up becoming one of our lead investors.
Did you see him as very much sort of mentor then? Was he there from the beginning?
Alvaro's, I mean, he's interesting because he owns one of the biggest wholesalers in Europe, flower wholesalers in Europe. So they definitely have a lot of knowledge, but it's very much the old school way of doing things. You know, it's classic wholesale.
Yeah.
And being able to go to their warehouse and see how things ran actually made, like, changed what my original idea was a bit, but not to be more like theirs, actually to be more different from theirs.
Yeah.
Because I found the process that they were putting, I mean, and they do Tesco, they do Sainsbury's, they do M&S, and they're shipping those all day long. And I saw this kind of conveyor belt process that was happening, and it lost so much personality and identity for what is a very emotional product. And I thought, we should be the opposite of this.
Definitely. I think even sort of looking at your site, that's that personal element you seem to incorporate very well, in the sense you know where it's coming from, then you can click on the specific sort of florist that you're looking at and have an insight into them. So I guess sort of understanding your competitor was a benefit.
Yeah, in that sense. Definitely. Seeing how the bigger players, like how their models worked, was really interesting. Also, after all the research I did, I felt that, one, being advice, you learn a lot about consumer behavior. So on one hand, yeah, we are really going through this movement of supporting independence. Mm. And I really didn't want to lose that. I really felt that you get way more variety in terms of style or flower varieties if you depend on several different people who have a different skill set.
Yeah.
Because within floristry, there are so many different styles. Mm. They are attracted to different flowers, etc. If we were one brand that controlled everything and was kind of vertically integrated,
yeah,
I think we wouldn't have that opportunity to be like multi-stylistic.
Definitely. So when you decided to sort of form your business structure for Flume, how, you know, which elements were you looking at and you were like, okay, this is essential for differentiating us between competitors or sort of larger commercial brands, like you said?
When I looked at the biggest players in the market, I think I tried to take what was beneficial about them. And if you look at someone like Interflora, the most beneficial thing is they are wherever you need them to be, and they can generally do same day delivery.
Yeah.
And that's because they rely on a network of florists. Then I looked at why their customer loyalty was decreasing so much. And it ultimately came down to the fact that we live in a world now where reviews are more important than a salesperson, right? You can walk into a shop and if a salesperson says buy this, or if you go on, you would still sit there and rather go online, research the product and see what your peers are saying. So the way that their model works is they define what the catalog is. And this catalog has to be limited in the sense you're talking about perishable and seasonal goods. So every florist in the world that works with them has to hold that in stock so that they can send what's in the picture, which of course isn't going to happen. But you can get that system closer to happening by having limited variety in the bouquets and only using popular flowers. And that's why everything you see on those websites are lilies, yeah, roses, carnations. So their model kind of screwed them up in the sense that it used to be a 1-800 phone number. So when they shot their own catalog and disseminated that order to whoever the closest florist was, it was fine because nobody, the customer and the recipient, couldn't see an image. The recipient would contact the customer and say, I love my bouquet, as everybody would say if they just received a gift from someone. They, yes, weren't going to be like, this is hideous.
Yeah.
But then we moved into a time where people had cameras on their phones and things like Instagram and WhatsApp, and everyone is sharing content in a different way. And suddenly you're getting a text that's saying, I love my flowers. But as a customer, you're like, that's not what I sent you. You know, that obviously the florist can't hold things in stock all the time. So we went into this realm where customers started leaving bad reviews because they were actually seeing what was showing up. And it was ultimately the model that limited them. So I thought, how do you get around this system where we still use a network of florists, but our model doesn't mean that we're telling them what to hold in stock because of this transferable ability people's ability to share pictures.
Yeah.
So we switched it. I built basically the first MVP that we built was a true marketplace in the sense that all of our bouquets are user generated by the florist. So they are telling us what they have in stock. And as a result of that, we can guarantee that what you send is what you get.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's just sort of placing the power back with, you know, the sort of the florist, which is sort of been turned around by a lot of sort of bigger brands, I guess. Sort of, do they, I'm assuming they sort of set the prices and sort of give you what they have.
Exactly.
Opposed to sort of turning around and say, okay, well, we want this, and you know,
exactly,
them,
yeah,
them not using what they have already. So it's very sort of that whole process is very efficient, which is quite a refreshing take, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, not only does it mean that the customer is getting what they sent, but it also means that you get such a different array of styles, yeah, different varieties that florists are using. It's just, it feels like much more of a personalized product than this,
yeah,
you know, structurally shot catalog image.
Definitely. How did you go about sort of approaching florists in the first place, and how have you sort of seen progression since then?
Before I launched, I actually went out and I thought, you know, how do we differentiate ourselves again? Our competitors don't publicize who any of the florists that they work with are. So I wanted to go out, and luckily, again, because of probably Instagram, we're going through this movement where florists have become influencers in many cases. Like, some of our florists have hundreds of thousands of Instagram followers.
Really? Wow.
So one of our ways to differentiate was, how do we go and sign on these people who ultimately don't need us? Because they have their own identities, their own customer base, etc. Yeah. So it was really about brand. It was building a brand that was new, fresh, one they hadn't been a part of before or didn't exist kind of in the market. And then building one that it was, the intention was, it had to be so strong that if they weren't part of it, they weren't considered one of the best.
Yeah.
So even if they didn't need us from like an order perspective, they wanted to be with us. And when I ran my initial interviews, there was some pushback, like, we don't need this, predominantly from the bigger ones. And actually, as we've grown as a brand, now that we've been able to get some of the big names, to be honest, florists come to us quite organically. Really? And I think community has been a really big part of that. We've been really focused on building a community that they want to be part of.
Do you find sort of that you're getting smaller florists that maybe don't have an online presence approaching you, or?
We get all different types, to be honest. We get the ones that have been around for like 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
And it's a family business, and, you know, they're losing a lot of their business because of the supermarket, and they just don't know how to compete in a market, in this kind of market. They're not like digitally savvy. They're not running SEO. They're definitely not putting any money behind PPC spend or anything marketing related.
Exactly.
So before, you know, you used to walk into a florist shop and you used to say what you wanted, and now everything is moving into this online space.
Yes, which, everything has to be convenient. We're sort of obsessed with not having any time.
If anything, it's more those people who feel like they really need us. But at the same time, for a new florist coming into the market, you know, they see it as an opportunity to learn from the ones that are on the site, and also get orders immediately.
Really interesting. How do you sort of make sure that the sort of market exchange between sort of customer and client is sort of balanced? You know, how do you work with them sort of maybe even on a day-to-day basis, your team and stuff? How do you sort of guarantee this?
Well, we run all of the customer service, so we're constantly in the middle of both of them.
Yeah.
But before that stage, it is a curated platform, so everyone is vetted on there. So we check everything from, what does their packaging look like? Where are they getting their flowers? At peak season, are they going to be able to deal with the amount of demand? You know, what is their infrastructure ultimately? Do they have actual skills, or are they just dropping something into a vase, which is very different from like the skill of wrapping a bouquet, which I think a lot of people don't realize. So because we go through that process, a lot of the time we're already signing up florists that are going to provide us the right products. Other than that, it's pretty much down to them. You know, they pick where they want to deliver, what their lead time is, and we just take the data we're getting across different months and try to share that across the different florists, so they can also become, or not become better, but kind of change what they're providing to fit what customer demand is.
Yeah. Have you sort of seen that get more efficient for your clients in terms of sort of helping them with, you know, seasonal periods? Or I know we're sort of in the Black Friday period right now.
Yeah. I mean, Black Friday is a weird one. We actually aren't doing it this year.
Yeah.
Because the price of flowers wholesale don't change. You know, we're dealing with a live good, not a good that is going out of season, which is really why Black Friday exists.
Yeah.
It's to get rid of back stock or old stock.
Yeah.
And we did it last year, and we realized we were really driving down the prices for these independents when they're still paying the same price. And it's hard for these smaller companies to compete. But otherwise, I think around whether it's a seasonal time or not, our focus is, it's marketing, it's customer acquisition, and it's retention. So they get to do what they want to do, which is be creative, create bouquets, learn how to manage their businesses a bit better, and we're just out there trying to find customers.
Yeah, so sort of sustain it more in the long term rather than sort of these sporadic periods.
Yeah, exactly. I think also we have a job in with the reach that we're creating or building to talk about seasonality a lot more on behalf of them. Because if you think of Valentine's Day, for example, the price of roses like triples.
Yeah.
From crazy. A wholesale perspective. And it's kind of a ridiculous concept that everyone thinks on Valentine's Day you need to send a roses. And these are these like mass produced, no longer have their scent, but maybe they last 7 days flowers. Whereas in with the reach that we're creating, we've started to talk about seasonality a lot more and what different flowers mean and why you should support either locally grown flowers or just different flowers in peak season, so you're not driving up that price.
And just touching on starting these new conversations, I noticed how your website also distributes different content. You talk about art or well-being. Did you include this from the beginning?
Because I came from Vice and ID specifically, I actually built the website as a content first site, and you shopped the content. And it was really about, you know, building experiences through stories, what specific people that we were interested in bought, or how people styled their homes, or how to make a bouquet. And from that, you could buy that actual bouquet. And then we, over time, realized that because flowers are more of a high intent product, people didn't want to shop in the way that you maybe buy fashion. You know, yeah. Fashion is like, okay, I'm looking at it on somebody, I like it, I'll buy it. Flowers are, I need to send someone something now. And that's really when you go and you want to go through this journey where you can create what you want immediately without going through a process of this is what it looks like on someone else. So we actually moved a bit away from coming in on the content first section, but we decided not to get rid of it entirely. And the reason for that is, like I think I was saying earlier, is we still have a role in talking about flowers in a way that moves away from just talking about these mass market, mass produced varieties where everybody thinks they want a certain thing because that's what's been sold to us through marketing channels. And being able to take different flowers and put them in different environments, like doing our flower of the month, or like talking about what the wellness section, what different things you can do with some flowers, take it, I don't know, lavender, etc. You know, we all know that some of them have healing properties, or you make tea out of them, so on and so forth. So yeah, it was important that we weren't just like a flower delivery website. We really kept the identity of storytelling.
Alongside this, how many clients are you working with exactly, and how have you seen them grow?
So florists, we started with about 12, 15 in London. We're now UK wide, and we have 110, 115 in the UK. And then we launched in New York in February with another 15, and we just launched it 3 weeks ago in LA. What's interesting about the US is, whilst we're not taking a UK-made styled product and selling it to a US customer, it's still local florists. So it's still a product that has already existed to that customer base. What's interesting to see is just the different types of styles that sell over there, and also how different the average order value is. It's almost like a completely different person in the way that they shop. Like a homepage, when we A/B test the website, a homepage here that is really successful is actually really, really bad for conversion in the US.
And do you envision this as going global? Is that where you would like to be eventually?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whilst we're UK wide, but in two other cities in the US, our customer base don't come from those cities. They come from, I think it's now 125 other countries.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a product that when you don't know where to go or who to use, you want somebody that you trust, and like you're looking at visual elements of that provider. It's, you know, you're sending something generally long distance to a loved one. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was really interesting when we started to look at that data and realized, you know, we had people from all over the world sending on our site.
And what has been the biggest point of progression that you have seen personally since you started?
I think definitely the amount of florists that now come to us. But also, I mean, there's so many things. You see, I mean, I don't know if NPS is relevant in this. Or most people even know what NPS is. But it's super important to investors, so you track it, and it's ultimately created out of reviews. People say whether they would be willing to refer you out of 10. And we've built this incredibly strong NPS score. It's 75, I think. A strong one is Airbnb, and they're in the 50s. So to see that data come back and understand, and you kind of read these messages and how happy customers are when they're like in Australia and they're sending to the UK, or there's such like great distance between such an emotional product, but to be able to tangibly see what they feel about being able to use a service like that, even though they're not the one ultimately receiving the product, I think wasn't the most surprising thing. I know the joy of sending flowers, but it was definitely one of the greater things to like see or feel. But otherwise, I think I'm most surprised by how willing florists are to adopt new technologies.
And this willingness to adopt new technologies, clearly a substantial development. Looking ahead, do you see a growing conformity?
I think what people don't realize is they are extremely hardworking business people. You know, these are people who wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to the market to buy flowers, and then they sit in a cold room all day.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a fun job. They're doing it because it's super passion driven. So when you build a product for them that allows them to continue to be creative, also helps their business, is ultimately a better business solution. They're really, really interested in, how can I integrate these things into the rest of my business? What else are you guys building? Like, they've almost been our biggest new feature builders because of their feedback.
Yes, and your website's still keeping in line with these organic and archaic elements of floristry. I guess this offers reassurance to the traditional florist. With all this in mind, if you could single out a piece of advice, you know, this could be from the perspective of a female entrepreneur, maybe as someone who has crossed industries, what would you pass on?
I've learned so many things. I think coming into doing something like this, which was so far from what I've ever done before, I think most importantly is my ability to teach myself things. Like in the beginning, I would go into a lot and just say, I don't know how to do this. And you put this block in your mind when you tell yourself you can't do something. And everything from building my first, you know, 5-year financial projections, or building a business model, or standing up in a room generally with like 5-10 men in suits, you know, like all of those things weren't something I had done before. And before every first attempted it, I was like, I need to find someone else to do this for me. And actually, when you do it yourself, you know the business in a way that no one else could know it. And I think it adds value because it allows you to iterate what the idea is every single time, or iterate how you do it every single time, because you're learning what's working and what's not. I think it's just like, try do it yourself. I mean, at the same time, people will now tell me, like, stop doing everything yourself because you're not getting anything done. But definitely in the beginning stages, just like there's so much on the internet. I watched endless videos about like how to pitch for fundraising.
Yes, something we haven't really touched on, but looking back, funding is difficult for the individual. Yes, in some cases, also more so for women. In these beginning stages, how did you find the funding process?
I don't know. I obviously got several no's, as everyone does. I was lucky in the sense that my first round, the first two people I met ultimately were my first two investors. Yeah. Even though the first one that I met, Tom Singh, who's the founder of New Look, he actually said no. Really? He said, I've been burnt by B2C companies before, but I really like your idea. And I went online, found all the B2C companies he'd invested in, and did a deck of how they could be better.
Wow.
I was like, maybe if they changed these things, you wouldn't. I sent it to him in an email, and then he ended up investing.
Amazing.
Yeah, I was like, I know better than these guys, don't worry. Which is probably not true, but I think definitely from an outsider's perspective, it's easier to see what's wrong with a company. But otherwise, like, yeah, I've got yeses and I've got nos along the way. I've never really felt like it was, you know, because of being a woman specifically. I think it's hard to raise money. For everybody. And what you need to do is you just need to know your business and have a good idea.
Would you cross industries again? You know, do you have any ideas about what you will embrace next?
We've now decided to go and build Flume into a software. So florists will be able to use the software to manage the rest of their businesses, aside from just selling through the B2C Flume.com element. And as you're building this process and you're working with these, you know, owners of these small businesses, you're like, oh my God, this software could work for so many other people, whether it's bakers or anything that like you want live, that's like a fresh good ultimately that you want immediately. But yeah, I've definitely in meetings been like, oh, we could also build this for all of these people. And the team's like, let's do this one first. Yeah, like, chill out. Yeah, ultimately, I mean, I think it's kind of, if you look at Open Table and what they did for restaurants or even Just Eat, you know, on Just Eat, whilst it was a delivery company on the front, what most people don't know is their restaurants could also buy 20 grams of cheese and 2,000 pizza boxes through their platform. And being on both sides, you know, the wholesale side and also the consumer side, you build a proposition for yourself and also for the business owner that I think if you had multiple products or digital products, you couldn't compete.
And what do you see looking ahead for Flume? 5, 10 years, say? Also along these lines, do you have an actual app that you use or are you looking to build one in the future?
No, we don't have an app yet. It's in the roadmap. I think at the moment, because we're city-based, so many businesses use us. Yeah. So Condé Nast use us, Burberry use us. It's a lot of like big business-to-business sending. And most of them don't sit at work and do it on their phones. So we still have a big... Yeah. When we look at the data, a lot of our traffic still comes from desktop. But you can also see that moving trend, obviously, to mobile. I also come from a mobile tech background. Like, I think everything should be mobile first. So we are going down that road either in like Q2 or Q3 of next year. But otherwise, I guess 5, 10 years. I definitely imagine that we're going to build a product that, you know, is going to be a global product, not in the sense that you can send flowers everywhere in the world, but also it's a software that people who own different types of small businesses can use anywhere in the world. And I'd like to see it as a unicorn one day, as we all do.
So thank you so much, Lana, for coming on. I really like this embracing a digital market. Clearly, it's very relevant, and I think it's a refreshing take on floristry as a whole. So thank you, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.